What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And if you didn't catch it, UFC 323 went down this past Saturday, and a lot of interesting stuff happened. I mean, holy cow, the entire, culture of the UFC, the entire landscape has been drastically shifted as we enter into the new year, which is just usually, from the past 2024, 2025, 2023, 2022, nothing groundbreaking has happened at all before going into the new year. And with UFC 323, a lot has changed. So we're going to be discussing every single fight and the implications that it has for the future. We're also going to be discussing the number of new UFC fights the UFC has released. And I'm also going to be talking about the NFL a bit as we've wrapped up week 14. And as we get into week 15, the playoff push is really dialing up. And a team that was number one in the NFC is now down to number seven. So I'm going to be discussing all that and more on today's episode, which I'm pumped for. I really am. I actually still have to tally up how I did on my UFC pick, so I'll do that really quickly before we jump into everything. But yeah, a lot of new UFC fights have been announced, so I say we just take a quick look at that to start things off, because I certainly have my thoughts on the matchmaking. Here's some insane matchmaking to kick off the first quarter of 2026. I mean, let's start with UFC 324. We've already been over that on the previous episode, but we have UFC 325, so they're running back-to-back pay-per-views, I guess not even pay-per-views, just numbered events to start off the year. So UFC 326 is going to be going down on, what's it looking like here? UFC January 31st in Sydney, Australia. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going back down under. And who's main eventing? None other than Alexander Volkanovski and Diego Lopez. Yeah, they're having these two freaking rematch. And yes, I am questioning the UFC's motives here. I don't know if they looked at Lerone Murphy and Moser Evlov and just decided neither of them were ready yet, but maybe it goes off of excitement. I know the first fight between Diego Lopez and Alexander Volkanovski was an absolute banger, but I mean, nothing's happened. Like, Volkanovski fought him in April, and that was that. Beat him pretty decisively. Now, Diego Lopez obviously had his moments, but to warrant another title shot, I don't really know what the UFC is doing there. So I wonder if they then are going to have Mosfar and Lerone fight. It's a mystery. Not up to me. Co-main event, Dan Hooker and Benoit Saint-Denis. Going to be a banger. Going to be a banger. Benoit Saint-Denis is probably my bounce-back fighter of the year. After going 0-2 in 2024, he landed three finishes in 2025 and was just phenomenal. And now he's getting Dan Hooker. A massive matchup here. He was kind of manhandled by Armin Tsarukyan, which I wasn't too surprised by. But it's going to be the number 8 and the number 6 guy throwing down. That is an excellent, excellent co-main event right there, if you ask me. Next up on that main card, we have Rafael Fiziev and Mauricio Ruffi, number 9 and number 14th ranked fighters in the lightweight division. That's just a striker's delight. All right, someone's going to sleep. Rafael Fiziev picked up a big win over Ignacio Bahomanez in June using the grappling. And as for Mauricio Ruffi, his grappling was exposed by Benoit Saint-Denis after having a highlight reel knockout in March. So we'll see what happens there. Taitre Vassa is returning to take on Talishan Teixeira, which is just not a good matchup for Taitre Vassa at all. Taitre Vassa has a Justin Toffa build, and oddly enough, I feel it's going to be going exactly how you think it's going to go. Mind you, Ty hasn't fought since August of 2024. Taitre Vassa hasn't won a fight since 2022. So, yeah, I don't really know what's going on there. And then opening the main card is Jimmy Crute and Dustin Jacoby. Jimmy Crute bounced back after a just awful run from 2021 to 2023. He went 2-0-1 this year, including two round one finishes. And as for Dustin Jacoby, two knockouts in his last two matchups, both of them amazing. I'm excited to see UFC 325. I thought it was 326. It was 325 as I'm taking a second look here. After that, the next thing I see here, I think they are going to the Apex. They're going to London. They're bouncing all around. But an official fight for Houston, Texas, February 21st, Sean Strickland and Anthony Hernandez, number 3 and number 4 middleweights in the division. And in terms of how I want that fight to go, I definitely want Anthony Hernandez to get this one done. It's crazy he's made his way all the way up to number 4 in the division. I find that really crazy, just the ascent of Anthony Hernandez. He obviously picked up the big win over Roman Dolidze, was supposed to fight Rainer Day Ritter, but, I mean, hey, dude is on an absolute run. And for Sean Strickland, he hasn't fought since February when he lost to Drixus Duplessis. So, been a minute since Sean's fought, and I know he did get suspended because he's an idiot. So, that is going to be a fun main event. And then the last matchup that I'm going to talk about here briefly. Max Holloway, Charles Oliveira, BMF belt in Las Vegas, UFC 326, March 7th. That's massive. That is just matchup. That's just massive, if you ask me. That is one of the biggest fights you're going to be seeing in a long time. And, you know, I'm a big Charles Oliveira fan. Would love to pick him. But Max Holloway is just on a highlight reel run, and I just don't see him being stopped. I don't. Going to go with Max Holloway over Charles Oliveira in that one for now. But, hey, my opinions can always change. You'd be surprised how often my opinions change with some of these fights. I mean, it's always recurring, always happening. So, a lot of big fights, still rolling them out. I mean, even UFC Vegas 112, which we're going to be predicting later in the week, they're rolling out new fights for that. So UFC is on fire, and yeah, I'm pumped to see what other fights they announce for the coming year. But now, now, we do have to talk about some other things besides UFC, and that is the NFL. And after the conclusion of week number 14, there's a completely different layout to the playoffs right now. So we're just going to do a quick little recap of everything that went down and then look at the little playoff rankings that happened. So first off, Lions and Cowboys, absolute barn burner on Thursday Night Football. I might say Jahmyr Gibbs is insane. And same with the Cowboys. They also didn't look too bad here. You know, I can't even lie. And they're obviously not in the playoffs right now. Their playoff hopes are looking kind of dim. But for being a 6-6-1 team, they played pretty good. No, I just think that the Lions got some momentum back. They're 8-5 now. They're on the hunt for the playoffs. They're currently still out, but give them another week or two, and they might be right back in it. So we'll see what happens. On Sunday, of course, Titans and Browns, and Shedeur Sanders went off. This is easily one of the best games that you're going to see from him. 364 yards, 3 touchdowns, a pick, yet it is the Tennessee Titans getting it done. And man, Titans, you can thank Tony Pollard. 161 yards, 2 touchdowns, just a breakout game for him this year. It's been a rough year, and he has absolutely exploded. Now, passing game, yeah, Cam Ward, not helping him out much. Not helping him out much at all. But with that, honestly, the Titans aren't even the worst team in the league, if I'm going to be honest. It's the Raiders. Raiders are easily way worse than the Titans. And Titans are 2-11 and just snapped their losing streak. Now, they are 0-7 at home, so I think they're going to try and avoid being swept at home. But we'll see what happens. And for the Browns, they're 3-10. And, yeah, they just can't win a game to save their lives. Seahawks destroy the Falcons 37-9. The Seahawks team looks scary, man. Seahawks team is looking good. It's crazy. Them and the Rams are going to be battling it out for the NFC West. It's been so fun watching both these teams play. And as for the Falcons, they're 4-9 and are just atrocious. Really, really atrocious. It has been so bad. Jaguars win 36-19 over the Colts. And the downfall of the Colts, you know, everyone around me was saying Colts are going to fall off. Colts are going to fall off. Lo and behold, 8-5 now, third in the AFC South. And Jags are 9-4. Jags are nasty, I guess. 4 straight wins. Another great game from Jacoby Myers. I'm clearly mistaken on thinking the Jaguars weren't good. And as of right now, they're the number 3 seed in the AFC. So good job to the Jags. We'll see what the rest of the season holds for them as they look to finish it off strong. My Minnesota Vikings, 31 rip over the Commanders. Holy cow. I mean, holy cow, and the Commanders have now lost 8 straight games. They started 3-2 and are now 3-10. That's nuts. That's nuts. They're just bad. They're bad every single way you look at it. And mind you, the Vikings are 5-8. It's been a rough year, but going out, getting a blowout win at home, you know, it's a little feel-good win. I missed it. I was working, but still exciting to see. Bills and Bengals have an absolute showdown for the ages, 39-34. Not shocked in the slightest that we saw a great performance from Joe Burrow here. Now, Bengals, 4-9, they're just not it. They just can't. They're just not good. And for the Bills, they're the Bills. 9-4 right now, I believe they're coming in as the 5th seed, which Bills as a 5th seed, dangerous. Dangerous as a 5th seed. They're definitely going to be the 5th seed unless we see the Patriots somehow lose 2 of their last 4 and the Bills win 3 of their last 4, which I honestly don't really see being the case. So exciting stuff there for the Bills. We'll talk about who they're going to be potentially playing in a second. Saints beat the Bucs 24-20. The fall off of the Buccaneers, very, very perplexing. I thought they were going to be a heavy hitter this season. Baker MVP, not the case. They're now tied with the Panthers. Now, currently the Buccaneers, do hold the tiebreaker. So Buccaneers are currently the number one team in the NFC South, but them, the Panthers, same record at 7-6. And for the Saints, 3-10 now, getting the third win of the year. Good for them. Was it pretty? Honestly, wasn't that bad. Then Steelers beat the Ravens for control of the AFC North. Steelers are 7-6. Ravens are 6-7. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Steelers getting it done. And yeah, they're in here right now. They're currently the fourth seed. And Ravens, man, they're not in the playoffs anymore. They're not. So it's going to mean gonna need to be a big push if Lamar wants to make the playoffs. This Ravens team is just not good for some reason this year. And I honestly cannot explain why. Dolphins beat the Jets 34-10. Is anyone shocked? No. Jets are 3-10. Tyrod Taylor did absolutely awful. Justin Fields came in and tried to salvage whatever he could. Nothing was salvageable. For the Dolphins, I mean, 6-7, they're just probably going to finish middle of the pack, but there is potential, barring if they can pick up a bit more wins. If they can finish out strong and win all their games, playoffs are in their future. But for now, no, I'm not really seeing it. Broncos then beat the Raiders in a very sketchy finish. You know, Raiders just, I think it was just the Raiders just were, they're bad. I think the Raiders are so bad, and they're so bad that it looks like they're selling when they play the Broncos. But Broncos also have won 10 straight, 11-2. Them and the Patriots battling it out. I believe there's still the number two seed. I think Patriots are one. And, I mean, for the Raiders, 2-11, they're the worst team in the league. They are worse than the Titans, confirmed. Confirmed from watching this game. Rams and Cardinals. Rams win 45-17. Not even fair. Not even fair. This looked like a professional team playing a college team. Cardinals are 3-10. 5 straight losses. I don't even know what to say for this franchise. You need star players here, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is just not going to cut it out for you. And Rams are 10-3 and are the number one seed in the NFC. Yeah, they are going to be dangerous heading into the playoffs. And then Bears and Packers. It was everyone's game they were watching this week. Packers win. Packers now hold a 0.5 game edge over the Bears. They're 9-3-1. They're currently the number two seed in the playoffs, and the Bears drop all the way down to number seven. Down to number seven. Are you kidding me? Tough to be a Bears fan, but hey, these next four games are going to determine a lot for both of these franchises. And then Texans beat the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football, which is just all but concluded that the Chiefs have fallen off, which is honestly very refreshing to see. I'm very happy with it. Chiefs are coming in now. They are, gosh, where are they at? 6-7. They are probably going to miss the playoffs, which is awesome to see. And for the Texans, I mean, 8-5, 5 straight wins. Yes, yes, go off. Go off, Texans. This Texans team is likable. I'm happy to see what they do. And then Eagles and Chargers battling it out on Monday Night Football. I need a very big performance from the Eagles defense. Can you guys please get big tonight? So, current playoff implications, all right? Those are all the matchups that happen. We'll start the AFC. Pats are the one. Pats are getting a bye right now. They're 11-2, 10-game winning streak. They've been killing it. They have a plus 110-point differential. Number two seed, the Broncos. I mean, also up there. 10 games straight, 11-2. They've been killing it. They are most definitely going to win the AFC West, and I'm pretty sure if they win and the Chargers lose their next game, actually, if the Chargers lose tonight and then Broncos win their next game, Broncos will clinch the AFC West, which I can presume they're going to be doing. The number three seed is the Jaguars. 9-4, 4 straight wins. I don't know how they keep winning. I have no idea the Jaguars keep winning, but they keep somehow winning, so good for them. Then at the four seed, Steelers, 7-6. It's between them and the Ravens. Them and the Ravens, we're going to see who's going to do it, but right now it's the Steelers. They're 7-6, and Mike Tomlin's going to do it again, isn't he? Always finishing above .500. The fifth seed right now is the Bills. So Bills versus Steelers or Ravens, I think that's an easy Bills win. So I think with the current slate we have, I can see the Bills making it, all right, to the second round, making it to the divisional round. But in terms of the wild card, I'm taking whether the Ravens can somehow do it, especially if it's the Steelers, I'm taking the Bills any day of the week. Coming in at the sixth seed right now, I believe, is the Chargers. But if the Chargers lose tonight, it's going to be going to the Texans. So Texans, Chargers, whichever 60 that is going to be, they'll probably be playing the Jaguars. And, I mean, whether it's Texans-Jags, whether it's Chargers-Jags, that's 50-50. But right now, out of that mix, I really like the Texans. They've had such positive momentum. I really feel like they can make a run. And then, yeah, currently in there at the number seven spot is also going to be a fallout of those teams. You know, it could be the Colts. It could be the Texans. It could be the Chargers. Those are the three teams right now in the mix. And, you know, whether I'm seeing the Broncos play, you know, Texans, Broncos play Colts, Broncos play the Chargers, I'm picking the Broncos any day of the week. So I'm thinking Broncos, Bills, Pats are going to be the heavy hitters coming playoff time. And then maybe you see a little sneaky Jags run or Texans run. We'll have to see. NFC got shaken up with the Bears' loss. They dropped from 1-7 as the Rams have taken control with the number one spot in the conference. But hey, locked in at that 5 seed is the Seahawks. They're also 10-3. Seahawks and Rams will battle for easily the 1-5 spot in the playoffs. 49ers are right behind them. They're currently sneaky in there with the number 6. So Bears and 49ers, watch them for the 6 and 7 seeds. 49ers are currently 9-4 and have won 3 straight. In terms of the NFC South, Bucks and Panthers. Bucks and Panthers are both 7-6. Gonna need to be a final push between the two, and we'll see what happens. And then for the Packers and the Bears, I mean, they're battling it out. Lions are also trying to sneak into the playoffs right now. They're not. But the Bears, they got to be careful. They might lose a playoff spot if they keep playing bad. And the Eagles just, the Eagles have such a layup to win the NFC East. It's almost like they just keep giving the Cowboys chances to pass them. But if the Eagles win here, they'll have a 3-game lead. And I think that might just about do it. So very excited to see playoff time coming around. Really like the NFC North's chances this year. I really do. I really think that the NFC North can make a run, make a play this year, whether it be the Lions, whether it be the Packers, whether it be the Bears. I'm happy to see it. And my Vikings are just trying to finish out strong. You know, it's potential we can finish 9-8. I mean, I'm happy to beat anyone nowadays, but I mean, come on. It is rough. And, you know, J.J. McCarthy didn't do too bad. Can't hate on him too much. J.J. McCarthy didn't look that bad as he usually does. But, yeah, that's just a little recap of the NFL. Nothing really surprised me too much with what I'm seeing. But I'd say I quit the lay in this and we get into our little UFC 323 recap because so much happened. It is shocking. And honestly, when we start with these prelims were super freaking good. Kicking off UFC 323 was featherweight action between Myron Santos and Muhammad Naimov. And I'm going to be honest, I was not shocked at all that Myron Santos handed it to Muhammad Naimov and knocking him out in round number 3. I mean, just so beautiful. By the time they got to round number 3, I mean, Muhammad just had nothing left. He really didn't. And Myron Santos coming in, getting his 7th straight win, 9th win by knockout. And this dude's 18-1, 3-0 in 2025. Could be debut fighter of the year if he hadn't had a fight in 2024. So 4-0 so far in the UFC. I'm excited to see what they use him for next. I actually already have a potential matchup that I want him to face. Melchizedek Costa, or I think Melchizedek Costa, Costa's his last name, is taking on Morgan Cherie next weekend. And I think the winner of that should take on Myron Santos because this guy's won the Ultimate Fighter, put on a great performance here, and his boxing looks crisp. Now, as for Muhammad Naimov, I mean, his 2-fight winning streak is snapped now. 2-2 in his last 4. He's been, you know, pretty average. I mean, he doesn't do too many things that are super special. Featherweight super deep along those same lines, whether Morgan Cherie or not Morgan Cherie. Actually, you know what? Nate Landwehr. Let's have Nate Landwehr fight Muhammad Naimov. I was trying to think of a name. Nate Landwehr. Nate Landwehr and Muhammad Naimov, throw down, make it happen. But yeah, Myron Santos, great work. And we're starting off the card with a little round 3 TKO. After that, Mansoor Abdulmalik runs through Antonio Tricoli. It's too easy. Really was, you know, Mansoor landed a takedown, and then as Antonio is standing up, Mansoor just locks in a tight guillotine. No hope for him at all. Antonio submits. And, you know, Antonio Tricoli is going to go down as one of the funniest fighters ever. 3 fights, 3 times finished, just awful. He is getting cut. As for Mansoor Abdulmalik, 9-0-1. Excellent work. He was the biggest favorite on the card and gets his 2nd career win by sub, and he now has a 100% finish rate. As well, 3-0 with a draw in the UFC, and big things are ahead. You know, middleweight division is deep. There's lots of options. There's middleweights on this card. We could just matchmake him with Marvin Vettori, for goodness sakes, if we wanted to, but I don't know what we're going to do with him. You know, I really don't. I know we're going to gas up our boy Mansoor Abdulmalik here. I know Rodolfo Vieira just got knocked out by Bo Nickel, and there's kind of this repeating thing where fighters that get knocked out are then fed to someone else who could potentially knock them out. So Rodolfo Vieira versus Mansoor Abdulmalik, build him up the best as we can. And, you know, it's a shame he didn't get a performance bonus. I think he should have gotten one, but hey, It is what it is. It was fun. It was good. And you know what? Not too bad. Not too bad overall. After that, Iwo Baranowski and Ibel Aslan put on the greatest minute and 29 seconds of the entire year. I mean, truly, truly, this may be the greatest 1 minute and 29 seconds I've ever watched in a cage before. Two knockdowns for Iwo, one knockdown for Ibel, 30 significant strikes to 22 in a minute and 29 seconds. I mean, just insane. These two from the get-go are just swinging at each other. Ibo gets dropped. Ibo starts laying it, or Aslan. We'll use Aslan and Baranowski because Ibo and Ibo are just too similar. Baranowski, Polish guy, starts laying into him. Then as they're getting up, Aslan clips him, and I thought he had face-planted and KO'd him. Baranowski hangs on. He's then hanging on to him. He has him up against the cage, laying into him. The Baranowski's eating shots, then just fires back a straight, clips him, drops Aslan, starts laying on the TKO, and Iwo Baranowski gets the finish. 2-0 in the last 3 months. Win in September, win in December, both of them under a minute and 29 seconds, I guess you could say, because his Dana White's Contender Series win was in 20 seconds. 7-0, and he gets his fifth career knockout, 100% finish rate. This dude is so freaking good. I love him. I love Iwo Baranowski here, and he was just looking so fire. And him, Bostinger, Sisakarov, Abdulrahman Yakyaev, these three coming off of season 9 of the Contender Series and just immediately making an impact in the UFC, you love to see it. And yeah, Baranowski, he is going to be a menace. Let me just tell you, light heavyweight, look out. Look out. And, you know, obviously, performance bonus here, if the main event hadn't been as good as it was, it would have been fight of the night. I mean, just crazy. Just really crazy. Now, in terms of what am I going to do with these guys, I don't know. I don't know what to do with Baranowski. I don't know how high to build him up. You know, Billy Elekana picked up a win over Ibel Aslan in July. He also picked up a win over Kevin Christian in November. He's 2-1, only losses to Bogdan Guskov. And he's taking on Junior Tafa coming up here at the start of the year. So I'd say winner of Billy Elekana and that Junior Tafa fight, you know, winner of that's going to be, you know, on a little streak. So I say Baranowski fights the winner of that. Now, as for, your boy Ibel Aslan, I don't know. I'm not sensing the best things for Ibo. He was really primed to be the next big thing coming into 2025. I mean, light heavyweight, he was my prediction for to be the biggest breakout fighter of the year. And for some reason, he just hasn't been able to connect it. And not only has he not had a good 2025, he ends it 0-3. So his 14-fight winning streak is snapped. He loses in February, July, and September. Or not September, December. So I think they'll bring him back for one more. And I think they'll give Ibo at least one more shot. But I don't know against who. I really don't. And it's tough to say. Especially with, gosh, how good, you know, a lot of people that he's been fighting are. Ben, it turns out that, you know, maybe he's good and he just has been getting the short end of the straw. But Kevin Christian lost to Billy Elekana. I say you just run Kevin Christian versus Ibel Aslan next. Who's Kevin Christian? Yeah, don't even ask me. He's just a name that I'm going to throw in for him to fight next. I'm irrelevant, a light heavyweight. But moving along after that, just which was so exciting, might I say, that was so much fun to watch. I actually was able to catch that. Jalen Turner and Edson Barboza. Oh my goodness, it was sad. This guy said, now I picked Jalen Turner. So at this point, I'm 4-0 on predictions. I'm going crazy. And for some reason, just Edson Barboza is clearly too old. And Edson Barboza needs to have a fight with Jim Miller, and the winner of that can just retire, or loser of that can retire. So Jalen Turner, we'll talk about him in a second, but for Edson Barboza, him versus Jim Miller, I don't want to see him fight anyone but veterans. That's all I'm going to say. This is three straight losses. This was a very bad knockout loss here, okay? This was really bad for Edson Barboza, and it breaks my heart. It really does, because this is the, I think, oh my gosh, what was his record coming in? He was like 18-13. He's still hunting to get that, you know, lucky number, gosh, what is it, 40? What win's he at right now? He's at 24. He's looking to get his 25th win. Yeah, Jalen Turner just looked primed today. Just from the get-go, just laying on the punches of Tevi, he dropped Edson bad and then just would not lay up on him. I mean, Edson was just running from him. I mean, just doing a full backpedal across the cage. And then when you thought that he was going to fire back, he gets hit more and more and more. And eventually just falls down. And Herb Dean's like, I've seen enough. And Jalen Turner is back in the win column. 15-9, first win since December of 2023, and he's back, ladies and gentlemen. The Tarantula's 100% finish rate also still intact. Love to see it, Jalen. Really do. Lightweight guys, it's tough. It's tough, but I think I know exactly who I'm going to matchmake him with. Grant Dawson, who we're going to mention in just a bit here. I think that's the next matchup I want to see between the two. So let's run it. Let's make that happen. Edson, only fight veterans next, but this was a nasty knockout. And mind you, that's three straight round one finishes and four straight finishes to open the card. Electric. After that, middleweight division, Bruno Ferreira and Marvin Vettori. And I'm so glad I switched to Bruno Ferreira last minute. I am very glad that I did that because why? He won. He won, but you wouldn't know he won by looking at the stats. 88 significant strikes to 77 in favor of Vettori. Both men landed takedown, but you have to watch the fight to understand it. And when you're watching the fight, damage is going to Bruno Ferreira. And this was close. It was a close fight. 2-1 in favor of Bruno Ferreira, but Vettori just, you know, I don't know what happened to him. I don't know. He was once on a roll. You know, obviously, he had the winning streak to get the Adesanya title fight. Then the fight the night with Paulo Costa. Then, of course, you know, Whitaker and Dolidze was always in that fight. But this is four straight losses. He's also 2-6 in his last eight. And he only has one win since 2023. Yikes. Yikes, yikes, yikes. Actually, we can even say since 2022, he only has one win. So what do we do next with him? He's fighting down. He's fighting very far down, and Vettori, by the way, right now is ranked at number 14, and he's getting booted from the rankings. Let me tell you that straight up, and I actually think the next man I want him to fight is Ikram Alkhasarov. I think that would be a very fun fight for Ikram, so Alkhasarov versus Vettori, let's make that happen. Now for Bruno Ferreira, he's going to be ranked number 14 in the world. He's going to be fighting upwards, and you know who I want this guy to fight? Roman Dolidze at 12. Just would be an absolute war. Absolute dogfight. Bruno Ferreira has now won three straight. He ends his 2025 3-0, and he's now going to be ranked. I mean, does he get much better than that for Bruno Ferreira? I don't think so. So, Roman Dolidze is a great opponent. I also like a Jared Cannonier pitch for someone he could fight. I think that's the next option and route we take there. But good win, Bruno. Look good doing it. And we were now 5-0 on predictions. And then, fair as I am, destroyed Nazim Sadiqov. And I was shocked at this. Yo, round one, Nazim, like, fails a takedown, and then Ferreira just goes and starts landing his own takedowns and gets 4 minutes and 22 seconds of control time. It was ridiculous. Round two, same thing. Also keeping the pressure on him, 23 significant strikes to four, and then with round two ending, Ferreira just starts laying some nasty elbows on Nazim and ends up knocking him out. Crazy enough, Ferreira knocks out Nazim Sadiqov. Just wow. Wow, did not see that coming. Ferreira is now on a 6-fight winning streak, and you can't deny him anymore. You really can't. And number 12-ranked Beneil Dariush said he's looking to get a fight soon. I think that's the route you got to take. I really think that's the route you got to take. Or Michael Chandler. Or, you know, the winner of Fazeev and Ruffy, or even the loser of that. But Ferreira, send him to the rankings. This dude is an absolute dog. Absolute dog. And, you know, after his last fight, you know, I didn't know if he had that finishing ability still. I know he was good, but he gets it done here. 6-win by knockout and over a guy like Nazim Sadiqov. Very, very talented. For Nazim, it's unfortunate. You know, it's an unfortunate loss here. It ends his 11-fight winning streak, which really sucks. But he's always in a war, always in a dogfight. And I already know for a fact he's going to be bouncing back from this loss. So, Nazim, don't sweat it too much. There's going to be other people out there for you to fight. Hey, maybe Edson Barbosa, just for the heck of it. I was going to be nice, but maybe not. We can also do Daniel Zaluber. Daniel Zaluber versus Nazim Sadiqov. Bang. Just match made a fight right there. After that, women's flyweight action as Macy Barber, ranked number 5, took on the number 9 ranked Karine Silva. And to no one's real surprise, Macy Barber just looked better in this matchup. I mean, 55 significant strikes, 21. 89 total strikes, 57. 3 takedowns for her, 2 for Karine. It was close. Macy looked strongest in rounds 2 and 3. So good stuff there for her. And crazy enough, Macy Barber is on a 7-fight winning streak. I don't know where these 7 wins just started piling up from, but she did. She's ranked at number 5. And there's only one fight left to make next. That's her versus Erin Blanchfield. We were supposed to have it in, I think it was end of May. And now, let's just make it happen. Why not? Erin's been on a roll. You know, Macy's been on a roll. Let's make it happen. For Karine Silva, there's just a certain skill level gap here between Karine Silva and the competition she can beat, because she's lost to top 10 talent in Vivian Araújo, who's no longer with the company, and now Macy Barber, but she beats lower level people. So we're going to give her somewhere in the middle. You know, Tracy Cortez just suffered a defeat to Erin Blanchfield. So the number 8 ranked Tracy Cortez and the number 9 ranked Karine Silva boom, match made right there. But this is your run-of-the-mill women's fight. You know, it was close back and forth, but Macy Barber always had the edge, and we correctly predicted this. We were 6-1 at predictions here, and it got even better as Chris Duncan defeated Terrence McKinney. And I almost wanted to go with Terrence just for the heck of it, but I knew Chris Duncan was just too good of a skill fighter here. And, I mean, on the feet, 38 significant strikes to 31. It was back and forth, but where Chris really separated himself, the ground game. Lands the takedown, eventually is able to land an anaconda choke in, and that was night-night for Terrence. Fourth straight win for Chris Duncan, 3 in 2025, two submissions and a fight of the night. And, yeah, dude. I mean, great win for Duncan. Great win here. Only his fourth career win by sub. More known as a knockout guy yet. He's been dialing up with the submissions. Three of his last four wins are by submissions. You know? So, good stuff for Chris. And people were throwing out the name Michael Chandler. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's just, they both bring this sort of bring it in your face punch and throwing down energy. And you know what? I love that fight. I'm going to steal it from MMA Theory. Going to steal it from Twitter. Let's make Michael Chandler versus Chris Duncan. Now, for Terrence McKinney, what do we do with him? I mean, you could do a lot. Terrence McKinney's a fun fighter. He really is. He's a live by the sword, die by the sword. Going to end 2025 here, 2-1, 17-8 on his professional record now. Never been past a round two, which is just absurd. So what do we do with Terrence McKinney? And honestly, I don't know. I really don't. Matheus Rebecca is a guy out there. Last three fights, all fight of the night. I think it could be an absolute war. And plus, both of them are just known to finish fights. So I say we run that. Terrence McKinney and Matheus Rebecca. Easy matchmaking right there. And as for Chris Duncan, keep your ears peeled for him. Scotland has a new king. All right, Paul Craig, I know you're retired. I know you're done, but Chris Duncan is here. He's ready and picked up an anaconda choke here. You can't beat that. With that, we got into the final prelim of the night, Manuel Torres and Grant Dawson, and there are levels to this. And Grant Dawson, we knew he had a fraud chin. We knew he had a fraud chin, and it happened here. Manuel Torres caught him, knocked him out cold, 2 minutes, 25 seconds. I freaking love Manuel Torres. And he has 17 professional victories. Might I add you? Yes, 16 of them are in round one. He gets another round one finish here. This guy is insane. 9 wins by knockout, 7 by sub, and the win streak is now at 2 for 2025. Only loss is to Ignacio Bajomarez, who's ranked at number 15. And in terms of what I want to see next for, you know, your boy here and Manuel Torres, I want to see him against Moicano at 10. I want to see him against Gamrot at 7. I think he's top 10 ready. And a performance bonus here is just a cherry on top with him. So excellent work for Manuel Torres. Did what he had to do. And as I was saying with Grant Dawson, Nazim Sadikov, Jalen Turner, I could even throw Terrence McKinney in there. There's a number of lightweights that you can just have him fight. And, I can sense that he is going to, you know, come back and just try and grapple his way. But when you're trying to stand and bang with a guy like Manuel Torres, it's not going to go well. Let me just tell you that outright. So prelims, 10 out of 10. Might be the best prelims of the year. I don't even know if there was a bad fight. I'll even say Macy Barber, Karine Silva, Bruno Ferreira, Marvin Torrey. They went the distance. They were still entertaining to 8%. So good stuff there. Then we got into the main card. And like every UFC event, these cards are always weird. And we open up the fight night with Jan Blachowicz and Bogdan Guskov. And, you know, round one was pretty back and forth. I'd give it to Jan Blachowicz. And then round two happened. And son of a gun, I saw just the crazy performance by Bogdan Guskov, dropping Jan, outstriking him 50-25. And then round three comes around, and Jan Blachowicz drops Bogdan and outstrikes him 50-27. I mean, it was almost just like an opposite way of both of them. But they both fought hard. They both really tried for the win. And in the end, both men just couldn't get it done. So did it. Did what he had to do and draw a fight. Draw a fight here, which I hate to see draws, but it kind of just shows the skill level of both of these men. So they're not going to run it back. That's for certain. And for Jan Blachowicz, the fact that this is now his second draw in his last four fights is hilarious. Still hasn't won since May of 2022. And for Bogdan Guskov, kind of a bitter way to end the year, but also going to a draw with a former light heavyweight champion who actually was the first man to defeat Israel Adesanya in MMA. Shouldn't be too bad. So what do we do with these guys? I know Dominic Reyes just lost. He got knocked out. But I think Bogdan Guskov versus him is the move to make. And as for Jan Blachowicz, you know, this was a draw. So I think we either have the number 7th ranked Usman Mirzakhanov fight him or potentially Magomed Ankalaev rematch. I would like that as well. So a lot of options to do with these two. They're both clearly still good. John Blachowicz is heading into his 40s. I don't want this to be his retirement fight, but the fact that this was at least on a card with a crowd, I will say, was a relief. So, thumbs up to both of these two, even if it was a draw. Then, Payne Talbot and Henry Cejudo, and the fact that Payne Talbot started the year with the loss and is still the biggest riser at bantamweight is insane to me. Just kills Henry Cejudo. 30-27, I mean, this wasn't even close. Wasn't close, and by the way, Payne Talbot is now, hilarious enough, lost to Rowdy Barcells. Rowdy Barcells went 3-0 on the year. And it's going to be Payne Talbot being ranked at number 10 over Henry Cejudo. Crazy. Crazy how the MMA world works. Now, Henry Cejudo fought like a dog, but Payne Talbot, this is the Payne Talbot we all thought he was, and he clearly is that guy. 134 swing of in strikes to 60, dropped Henry Cejudo in round number 2, even landed 3 takedowns on Henry Cejudo. Wow. Just wow. So, Payne Talbot, excellent performance here. Was even acting like a little troll during the fight. It was, you know, but it was great. It was great. So it's just funny. Rowdy Barcells had an amazing 2025 and is not even going to be getting a ranked opponent. It's actually the man he beat in January, Payne Talbot, who is in the ranking. So what do we do next with Payne Talbot? I mean, there's a couple options. And I think the number 11th ranked David Martinez is the perfect next step. I'd even say Mario Bautista at 9. You know, right between there. We're going to throw him in the rankings. This was good stuff. And as for Henry Cejudo, he should have never came back. Retired at the top of his game. And since returning, lost in 2023, 2024, and in 2025. Ends his career on 4 straight losses. Not the best Triple C, Henry Cejudo. But yeah, great work, Payne Talbot here. I was surprised. I really thought Henry was going to get it done, but clearly not. Good job, Payton Talbot. I will eat my words happily, you good young man. After that, Tatsuro Taira and Brandon Moreno. When people are saying early stoppage, early stoppage, early stoppage, no. No, 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 no. This was no early stoppage, let me tell you that. This was Tatsuro Taira destroying Brandon Moreno. This was a skill gap here. Round one, you know, Tatsuro Taira, you know, reversed a takedown and actually ended up almost getting submitted, getting on top, winning the round, 3.5 minutes control time. Round two comes around, immediately goes for a takedown, keeps the pressure on him, takes Brandon Moreno's back and just lays some nasty ground and pound to the side of the head. I mean, Tatsuro Taira was trying to beat the face off of Brandon Moreno, and I was all here for it. Tatsuro Taira gets the TKO in round number 2, and guess what? 2-0 in 2025, 2-0 since August, and he's going to be ranked number 2 in the world at men's flyweight. I love it. And, you know, depending how long Alexander Pantoja is out, yeah, he's next in line for a title shot, if you ask me. Tatsuro versus Joshua Van, give it to me if need be. I mean, this was hype. This was hype. And, you know, I'm not a Brandon Moreno hater. I'm not, but this was the best for business decision. It just was. It was what needed to happen. Moreno, you know, he'd beaten Abazi, he'd beaten Nursing, it'd been whatever, but this is what needed to happen. And it certainly did. And crazy enough, the first time Brandon Moreno has ever been finished in his career. Just wild. Just wild. And it was Tatsuro Taira. I knew he was freaking good. I really did. He's one of my favorite fighters. 25 years old from Japan. Gets his 6th career knockout. 14th career finish. And he is a very impressive 18-1. Yes, next title shot ahead for Tatsuro Taira. If we don't do a rematch. He's even going to fight the winner of that. Just so we're all aware. Now, as for Brandon Moreno, who hasn't he fought yet? How about the number 7th ranked Asumabayev, or better yet, the number 8th ranked Kyoichi Horiguchi? I think we're all in agreement. Kyoichi Horiguchi versus Brandon Moreno. Let's make it happen. Book it, UFC. That's the perfect fight to make. Next up, the co-main event, Joshua Van, Alexander Pantoja. Just tragic. Just tragic. And, you know, it's weird that the UFC does this rule where if you injure yourself, that it's not a no contest. It's not even a scratch or anything. No, it's just a TKO win. And similar to when Aspinall lost to Curtis Blaydes, similar to when, I'm trying to think, Anderson Silva, when Chris Weidman leg checked him, their opponents, and broke their feet. In this case, you know, this counts as a championship win for Joshua Van, and it's kind of awkward because it's like it's not even like an Aljamain Sterling scenario where it's like we don't think he won a decision. This is one of those things where it's like Pantoja like just couldn't fight. Like, his elbow clearly dislocated. He clearly broke his arm to some degree. So what happened, if you weren't aware, Alexander Pantoja threw a leg kick about 20 seconds in, and he kind of caught it from Joshua Van, and as Joshua Van went to put him down, Pantoja went to put his arm down to stop it, and just bent his arm the wrong way. It was gross to see. It was nasty. I'm in the middle of the bar, and I was just going, oh my gosh, no, no, no. And yeah, it was nasty to see. But yeah, Joshua Van, talk about a great 2025, four fights, two knockouts, I guess, and becomes your new men's flyweight champion. Yeah, Joshua Van is your placeholder champion while we have an injured Alexander Pantoa. I mean, there's not much to say here. This, if anything, is just kind of screwy. You know, it's just kind of screwy because it's like he didn't actually lose. Pantoa didn't lose. We didn't even get to see the real Joshua Van here. We didn't get to see anything. So another title fight ruined, this time by an actual injury, Tom Aspinall, which, I mean, Tom Aspinall is milking that injury right now. There's word Oxpera may be moving up to fight Shogun for the vacant belt, just letting everyone know that. But yeah, I say we just run this back. When Pantoa is healthy, and if he has to be out a longer period of time, then he'll fight the winner of Joshua Van and Tetsuo Taira. I mean, it's so funny, but I will say Joshua Van celebrating it like it was a real win is just kind of weird, because it's like, I know you became the new UFC flyweight champion, but you didn't actually beat him. You know, he broke his arm, and there was nothing to do. So, tough luck. End of the day, we move along. We'll pick this back up maybe in the summer. Tough stuff. Really tough stuff. Really remind me of UFC 321 and just the disappointment with the eye poke. But thankfully, we ended the night with a bang and a shock. And a shock as Pyotr Nomerzyan defeats Merab Dvevashvili. Just crazy. Just scenes. And, you know, round one, I gave to Merab. I will say he went 2 of 29 on takedowns. Merab was on his takedown defense, outstruck him significantly, 139 to 134. Mortal strikes to Merab, 196, 159. Pyotr goes 5 of 9 on takedowns. But Merab was attempting submission attempts in rounds 2, in rounds number 4 it was. And, you know, Merab was fighting here, but Pyotr Jan just truly studied him, truly knew what to do and what not to do. And then today, didn't get taken down, land some takedowns of his own, and impressed everyone. Pyotr Jan, your new men's bantamweight champion. And Merab was ranked at number 3, so is Pyotr Jan now the number 3 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet? And I don't know, but 4 straight wins, becomes your new champion clean, and honestly a feel-good moment for Pyotr Jan. He's clearly talented, he's clearly good, he's going to jump from number 3 to your new men's champion. And I think the question beckons now, not so much what is next, because these two clearly have warranted a trilogy. I mean, this was a fight of the night, this was a great performance. These two fought till the very end, really just throwing down tough punches, landed, throwing kicks, landing takedowns. This was a fantastic fight. And at the end of the day, like, all I can really look at this and say, all I can say is that, is Merab Dvevashvili still the fighter of the year? Because there really is only one other person I would consider, and that is Islam Makhachev, because he was actually able to get 2 fights in. But both of those opponents, like, it kind of was a day's notice. Jack Del Moreno was kind of cherry-picked, and he couldn't get the finish. I mean, it's a really weird scenario here, but I would say yes. I would say Merab is still the fighter of the year. Pyotr Jan is obviously going to end the year becoming your new champion, entering the top 10 in the men's pound-for-pound. And, you know, in terms of what's next, you know, we haven't seen Pyotr Jan versus Umar Nurmagomedov. And I know that Umar Nurmagomedov has a fight coming up with, who is he fighting? I think it's Deiveson Figueiredo. They got a fight booked between those two. You also have Sean O'Malley and Song Yadong. So we're going to see what the fallout of that is. Merab just needs to take a break. Merab can come back in the summer, immediate title shot against anyone he wants. But I tell you exactly what they're going to do. If Sean O'Malley defeats Song Yadong, you're getting Sean O'Malley Pyotr Jan too. End of the day, guarantee it, which I'm not complaining, because that would be utterly fantastic. But the only other person that Merab could really fight that he hasn't fought yet is Amin Zahabi, but that doesn't even really make sense. Merab is going to be in the heavy hitters of the division, and you know, it's just kind of crazy. Like I said, the entire foundation of the UFC has been shook. New champions in the men's flyweight and bantamweight division. We're kind of robbed of a potential dual title fight between Pantoa and Merab, which would have been legendary. Tetsuo Taira enters the title picture. Peyton Talbot's now in the top 10. We have another draw for Jan Blachowicz, and the breakout performances for Chris Duncan, Manuel Torres, Fair Zayam, Bruno Fajera, Jalen Turner, Iwo Barnuski, Mansour Dumlik, and Myron Santos. Just a 10 out of 10 night at the UFC office. So 323, what a blast. It was fun watching the highlights. I was able to watch a bit of Pyotr Jan and Merab live. I mean, I was busy bouncing around at the bar, but still fun nonetheless, and I enjoyed it. I really did. But Now we look forward. We have one more event in 2025, and it's UFC Fight Night. Brandon Royval versus Manel Capon. As of right now, I think they've got about 11 fights booked. I don't know. I'll give another day or two before I actually make my official notes here and see the fights. But, yeah, we're going to see how we end the year. Final pay-per-view of the year was one of the more better ones, I will say. Obviously, some unfortunate aspects here and there with the arm break for Pantoa. But other than that, it is what it is. We had a super fun time. So, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will let you all go. We'll be back later in the week. Don't you all worry. We're going to be dropping our UFC Vegas 112 predictions. We'll even give our little NFL Week 15 quick predictions and go over anything else that we want. It's the Surprise Jab Podcast. I can talk about whatever I want. So with that, I bid you adieu. Go make it a good week, guys. Stay warm out there if you're in a cold state, and stay cool if you're in a warm state. And you can just always be cool if you listen to the podcast. That's all I have to say. All righty, guys. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.